This is Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
Hello there. Great to be back with you. When you were growing up, did you ever hear the word resilience thrown around much? You know, did mum or dad say to you, you've just got to be more resilient? If you're over the age of 20, probably not. So why do we hear that term thrown around so much these days? What is resilience? Has its meaning changed at all over time? Why is it important? And how do we build it in not only us ourselves, but also the children around us? What does that look like? Today on the program, we're going to explore how we can help teach kids the strategies they need to get through the challenges life naturally throws at them without us stepping in all the time to save them. And what happens if we don't let them fail? What are the longer term impacts? Let's find out.
The conversation continues
with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
With me on the Focus panel today, Clark White. He's an educator who's taught at every level, really, every year level at school. But these days, he is the head of Guildford Grammar's prep school. He's also a father of three. Taryn Houghton is executive of engagement at Helping Minds. And Helping Minds, it's an organisation that offers support to families of people with mental health issues. Part of its service is providing mental health education and early intervention programs in the community. She's also a mother of two and health and community psychologist. She's been on the show before, Dr. Marnie Leishman, who's worked with thousands of people. She's a mindset and wellbeing coach and also a mum. So plenty of experience here in this area. Good morning to all three of you.
Morning, Jess. Lovely to be here.
Good morning.
Clark, let's kick off with you. You have spoken about and written a lot about resilience. What does it mean to you?
I think the best definition I've heard is that ability to bounce back from adverse life moments, life experiences. And it is simply that. It's the ability to come back from when life throws you the curves that it does in the bumps, the ability to have the tools and the background and the knowledge and the support to bounce back and get back to your normal self.
Marnie, why is it important to be resilient?
Oh, because life happens, doesn't it? Not all unicorns, is it, life?
Unfortunately, yeah, you do start to realise that from quite an early age, don't you?
Exactly, exactly. And I think, you know, really good parents, we try and cushion our children from the bad stuff, don't we? But that's not particularly helpful when life slaps us in the face now and again, which it will for all of us at different times, sometimes more than others, we'll get that big slap, but all of us will. And I think, a lot of people don't have that ability to dust themselves off and get back up and get back on their life track again. I think that's what we're finding.
You're a practicing psychologist, and I mean, obviously you'd see a lot of clients dealing with this. Is it an issue as much for adults as it is for children trying to get through the ups and downs of life and just realizing that that is normal? Yes. You have to build that resilience.
Yeah, exactly. I think people are travelling through life at the moment and, I think the pandemic has really raised consciousness around how important it is to manage our own well-being. But I think a lot of people who come and see me are quite shocked when something bad happens as though they were never expecting it. And a lot of people don't have those tools and techniques to actually, navigate back on that pathway again. They don't really know what to do.
All right. Well, today we're going to have some tips for them from all three of you. Now, I'm asking you today, what does resilience mean to you on a personal level? And I suppose as well, do you try and build it into your own children, into your own life? I don't have kids, but certainly with, nieces and nephews, it's something I'm pretty conscious of all the time. I know their parents are. So I'd love to hear your experiences. Peter in Gosnell says, resilience is just a more qualified flash wire word for toughening or manning up. That's, I think a few people would probably agree with you on that, Peter. Keep your thoughts coming on that as well. Look, let's bring you in here, Taryn. What's your advice for how someone can build resilience in a child? What do you say to them?
I think it's really important that we allow our kids to fail and we support them to do that. As Marnie was saying, we want to cushion our kids today, but we actually have to give them experiences where they might fail, but guess what? They might actually succeed.
Why are we so scared of failure? Where is this coming from? Why do we feel the need, do you think, to either any of you, this need to cushion? Why do we have? Where does that come from?
I think there are a lot of parents that they may have mental health concerns themselves, and we know that if parents have anxiety, that may contribute to children being less resilient because parents may actually not want their children to, you know, go through what they've been through.
Do you agree with that, Marnie?
Yeah, for sure. I think parents with their own experiences are really trying to protect their children going forward. But the thing we need is almost that inoculation, not in medical terms, we won't start that argument.
Phew.
But it's that, yeah, going through the really tough stuff. Because resilience is it's a beautiful word, but we can't just talk about it. Kids have to feel the experience of it and know that it's the mistakes or the failure is actually okay, and they learn a tremendous amount in that time on that pathway to being successful in anything.
Clark, what do you see with parents? Do you think that sometimes parents are too eager to step in and try and cushion this? How does this play out in a sort of a schoolyard scenario, generally speaking?
Oh, definitely. You see it all the time. And we have terms like snowplow parenting, hovercraft parenting, Apache helicopter parenting.
What's the worst? Is there a particular one of
they're
those?
All, they're all equally
they're all
bad.
Pretty bad. Okay.
But we used to parent in community. And when we parented in community and we shared all our difficulties and all the ups and downs, and then when we stopped parenting in community and went to this idea that we parented in isolation and we had to be the perfect parent and project perfection that we got this right, then we hid the mistakes and hid the failures, and then we diminished the power of failure by trying to appear perfect to everyone else. So part of the solution there is we need to go back to parenting and community and talk about when our kids mess up and talk about their mistakes, because we're all doing it and all our kids are doing it, and we just need to talk about it more.
Mm-hmm. Has something changed here, though? Because I was talking to my colleagues earlier when we were prepping for this show and saying, you know, I just don't remember Mum and Dad saying, you've got to be more resilient, just be more resilient. It was almost just innate. You just had to. Well, what's changed in the style of our parenting, Marnie Leishman?
Oh. Well, you know, like Clark said, I think we're wired to be in collectivist cultures, and we're wired for listening to stories and narratives about from our wise elders about people's journeys on life. And nowadays, in this modern busy world, a lot of our children are actually learning from social media and things like that and TV. And on that, you see kind of the snapshot of someone's success, someone's light, someone's beautiful face that's very much filtered. You see all the successes, and what we don't hear, because we're not getting the full video reel of people's lives, is we're not getting the mistakes, we're not getting the failures, we're not getting the dark, we're not getting all of that other stuff that actually contributes to the grit that we all need to go forward.
We're Jess Strutt on Focus. We're talking resilience today. We'd love you to be part of the chat. I thought it would take a little longer to get to this social media thing, but Taryn, let's get a response from you. What role is this social media playing on this idea of perfection, that we're all somehow just living these fantastic lives, out to dinner, just rolling in it, and life's just bliss?
Well, I think that what you've said there is that most people actually know that social media is the perfect life that we want to project. And some people and some parents will say, well, my kids aren't going to have social media because it's going to impact on their mental health. I actually look at it from the other perspective. We run some sessions on how to be on social media in a healthy way. So teach your kids that it actually is an idealized world. You know, we talk to teenagers and I say to them, how many photos did you take before you put up that perfect shot? You know, for some, it could be 100. Mm-hmm. How many filters did you put across it? Okay, so teach your kids that social media is like a magazine. Remember back in the old days when there was...
Oh, yes, Dolly and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Women's Weekly.
And there was all of the editing on that. And that's exactly what happens today. So kids can be on social media in a healthy way.
And just maybe some older listeners may not be aware of filters. I mean, a filter is basically a bit like makeup. It make you glow a little more on the particular picture, but I'm hearing you there.
This is Focus on ABC Radio Perth.
Yes, it is, and we are talking resilience today. Love to hear your thoughts on it. Chris from Pinjarra has called in. He's got four girls, four daughters. Hello, Chris.
Yes, good morning. I'm just with resilience, I find with that they need to take responsibility for their actions. So whatever mistakes they make, they need to own them. And also, I've always practiced making them, you know, reasonably competitive. So in that regard, I don't allow them to win. You know, for example, if we're playing checkers, that, you know, all while they were growing up, that if they won a game, then they truly won, and you know, they could see what life is really about, because life is competitive, unfortunately. You know, no matter what you do, you need to own your mistakes and be reasonably competitive, because that's what life is, unfortunately.
Chris, once they realise that they can't always win and they lose a couple of times, does the lesson get easier?
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. You know, because they understand that, you know, that you don't always win. You don't always get the gold star. You don't get the merit award. I believe that's all hokum. I don't think, you know, that people should be getting awards for something that they truly didn't, you know, achieve anything at. You know,
that's a good point, Chris. I want to get a response there from Clark White, the head of prep school at Guildford Grammar. I mean, we did go through this phase, and I'm pretty sure it's still happening, where everyone gets a medal. Is that still happening? And is that part of the problem, the idea that, you know, we're all created equal, but, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes you are going to win and sometimes you are going to lose.
Yeah, exactly. Chris is spot on with that, in terms of that I think we're moving away from the everybody gets a medal culture.
Oh, thank goodness.
We realize the damage it does to everybody. And also like his point about teaching his girls responsibility, because unfortunately one of the issues with resiliency is we've got a finger-pointing culture that we always want to find the fault with other people. It's a school, it's a teacher, it's somebody else, it's the other kid. And my dad had a great one. When you point your finger at somebody, you have three fingers pointing back at you. And so taking responsibility, like Chris said, is a really big part of teaching resiliency.
A couple of your texts. Helen texted in. She says, I think the self-esteem movement may have been responsible for or inversely correlate with the loss of natural resilience. When we strive to stop everyone feeling bad about themselves ever, we deprive those people of naturally learning to cope with feeling bad and learning to use their own agency to feel better. Helen, that is a very, very lovely and thoughtful text. I'll get a response from Dr. Marnie Leishman.
Yeah, for sure. I think people seem to avoid those negative emotions, but we actually need all the range of emotions. Someone mentioned before, another caller was saying about manning up, but we need to teach our kids to man down as well. We need to hold space for all the emotions, know that anger and sadness and disappointment and frustration is as valid a feeling as happiness and surprise and all those other positive ones that we reinforce. All of us, no matter what gender you are, you need to be able to express all emotions because you're constantly reacting to what's going on in the context of your life.
Taryn Houghton?
Mum, what do you think about emotional check-ins? So that's one of the things that we run through with parents with our resilience program. And I think that as parents, you know, we are a lot more, you know, mentally aware these days. We teach our kids, you know, all of those life skills. And I think teaching them emotional check-ins is so important because, you know, anger and frustration is completely normal, but I think checking in what's going on underneath.
Can you explain as well, in answering that, can you explain what an emotional check-in? Because not everyone will be familiar with that term.
Yeah, well, I think we just walk around during the day being very automatic and we're very driven by our feelings, but this is actually bringing it into our consciousness, isn't it? Emotional check-ins are, well, how am I feeling right now? Because we go through a range of different emotions on a daily basis. But I think what it is actually just stopping, having that self-awareness, observing it, holding space for it. So if you're feeling really angry, instead of pushing that straight away because society tells you not to be angry, it's allowing it to happen. Maybe you need to express it and regulate it. And then choosing, having a choice as to whether you actually do something to change that state that you're in.
It's 20 past 10. News headlines coming up for you at 10:30. This is Focus with Jess Strutt. And I've got today with me Clark White, the head of prep school at Guildford Grammar, Dr. Marnie Leishman, a psychologist, and Taryn Houghton, who's the executive of engagement at Helping Minds. I'll go to a couple of your calls shortly, 1-300-222-720, to get your thoughts on resilience. But I want to know just some practical, I mean, beyond let them fail, telling your kids they don't always have to win, How do you set this up? Let's start with in the home, because obviously some of this has to come from the home. Not everything can be taught in the schools, despite what some may think. So what does that look like to you, Clark White? How do you build resilience within the family home?
Yeah, it's a great point, and it's really important. So two things that I think are important that we talk to families about. One is, and it's very rare, but to build a set of family values. So what are the key words and points that you as a family want to live by? So you give them that strong base that they have, and whether it's respect, integrity, honor, and you talk about those words. So you build that language in early. The second thing is about being strengths-focused. I love doing strengths assessments with kids and as a family. So they know when things get tough, what are my five super strengths that I can leverage? And I always tell kids, write them on your mirror, because they spend a lot of time in front of the mirror.
They do.
And they see the words, and they know when they see the words, which one can I leverage today to deal with the adversity I'm facing? And because they're superpowers and super strengths, it comes from a sense of empowerment rather than deficit. And so values and strengths is one big thing. And as you said, Marnie, too, about stories, the power of stories. They need to hear our stories about when we failed and when things were tough, because they think we had this linear life that led to this awesome being that we are now, when actually it was crazy bumpy.
I think Bronwyn is a mother, and she's on the line and wants to touch on this very topic. Good morning, Bronwyn.
Good morning. Thank you for letting me speak. Yeah, I believe that we need to allow our children to take risks and let them problem solve it, not parents jump in and try to solve everything. I have a 10, 11-year-old, one daughter, and she is our foster child, so she has come to us with some other issues, but over the years she has just grown and got so confident due to our husband allowing her to take the risk, plus also knowing that where she is safe and she can always come back and tell us, plus also her knowing that we've failed. I've done things, my husband's done things, and we've learned from our mistakes. So I think sometimes these parents out there are making themselves too big, and they're trying to be the best of everything, and you see and read it. And I'm like, well, we've all made mistakes, and that's how, and we will continue making them. So with our little one, she hopefully will grow knowing that it's okay to do the things that aren't right, but hopefully you'll do it right later on. And also, one thing I do want to just say, I think it's so important that they sit around a table every night, a kitchen bench, a floor, no TV, no technical stuff, and you talk about what's happened, or you go for a walk, or you swim in the pool with your children and let them talk.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple thing, isn't it, Bron? When it happened back in the day. Can I ask you, when you told your 11-year-old daughter or foster daughter that that you failed at certain points in life, what was her reaction?
She was quiet, and she's only been with us 3 years. We couldn't have children, so, and she will stay with us for as however long she wants to. But she was like, really? Really? And so she kind of looks up to us, and we're like, yeah, and she adores my husband, which is her father figure. And we're like, yeah, of course. You know, I can remember that boy talking to me and being rude to me, or I can remember falling off, or, you know, running a race and I fell over halfway and people laughed at me and I just got up. And so, you know, so she knows that we all were children.
Yeah,
but I do think some parents, and as I'm an older parent, I'm 52 and I was brought up in this, you know, when you ran off and you didn't come home till late. And she is very much being brought up, hopefully, a little bit old-fashioned. You ride your bike to school, you haven't got a phone.
Bronwyn, thank you for sharing that advice. And I think there was a lot there. Now, Clark White, I want to get a response there, because you fist-pumped when, almost fist-pumped, I would say, my terminology, when we just heard there from Bronwyn about sitting down at the dinner table, devices away, talking about the day, failure. Why is that important?
Well, actually, all three of us were just nodding. Like,
they were. Yes, they were.
Every single study out there shows the benefit of one meal together as a family on so many different ways: academic success, social, emotional success, all that, because we can have the conversation, you know, what are two roses and a thorn today for you? Talking about our days and having adults talk about the two roses and the thorn for them, and talk through the language, because as we talked about, they get the wealth of language about the range of emotions you can have. And putting the technology away is massive. And that's to moms and dads too. That's really important.
Taryn, you want to add to that?
I agree completely, but I also want parents out there, because I think, like, sometimes parents can feel that they're failures. You know, if they don't have the time to sit down at the table, if they don't have the time to make a meal, you know, I'm a single parent with, you know, 50-50 custody, and sometimes those conversations, they happen in the car on the way to sports practice. So I just want parents out there to know that what we're talking about, it doesn't have to be kind of a set thing. What we're saying is make time to have those conversations any way you can as a family.
So it's not necessarily structured. This is the time we're going to talk about when you can fail, just like mummy and daddy. This is a just a part of life. It should be thrown into everyday conversation then, Marnie Leishman?
Oh, for sure, for sure. And it is, it's constant communication, just talking. And I'm like you, Darren, in that most of my most powerful conversations are side to side in the car on the way to some sports training. That's pretty much me every day and all weekend. So it is actually rarely sitting down around the table because we're just, I've got teenagers and we're not doing that. But it's, yeah, what's happened in your day, the good stuff, the bad stuff. What are you grateful for? What went well? What didn't? It's the whole conversation. It's being authentic and vulnerable about everything that you've gone through, and me as well, talking through my day.
Yeah. To be, you know, aware of their mum or dad's feelings, yeah, and knowing that mum and dad might be having a bad day, and that's why, you know, like, we have to teach our kids that emotional intelligence.
Hey, you're with Jess Strutt. This is Focus, ABC Radio Perth. Lovely to have your company. But I'm asking you today, how do you build resilience in your kids, grandchildren, I don't know, nieces and nephews, if you don't have kids? What do you think works? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this topic. Some great callers and texts already. This text says, my husband always lets our six-year-old win games, but I don't. I think we are teaching him that mum is mean. Uh-oh, that's no good. Correspondent Pamela says, g'day, Jess. When we were kids, we were self-sufficient and independent in many ways. Too much of the mamby-pamby catchphrases and words like resilience and mindfulness. Get back to hands-on parenting and the responsibility of being parents ahead of self-interest. Get down and play with and show interest in your children. People need to stop relying on others all the time. Thanks, Pamela. Gratitude is an important part of resilience, says Holly. She adds, it gives the person or the child a chance to reflect on the good parts of life despite the challenges he or she is experiencing. Is that right? Gratitude, is that part of this, do you think, Clark White?
I do actually think gratitude and empathy are two of the main cores to teaching resiliency. And again, it comes back to language. Mm-hmm. It's about talking about language with empathy and gratitude, and taking moments every day to be grateful for what we have and for different people in our lives, and for the ups and downs as well, to be grateful for the ups and downs. But Holly's spot on. Gratitude and empathy are two core parts to this.
Now, keep your text coming. Thank you, Andrew, for yours. He says he's got a 19 and a 16-year-old boy. At the end of the day, the meal is sit down. No devices or books. That's the event. Each of them are responsible for cooking one meal each week. Andrew, this is where I start to regret not having children. if they're all as good as that, cooking meals and taking some responsibility, thank you for sharing that. We've got a text from Shane in Melbourne. Thank you for listening, Shane. He says, resilience, great conversation, Jess and guests. Failing or having something go wrong in itself is a little trauma, and from that we build resilience and, more importantly, then gain the ability to be empathetic to others. We grow from these experiences and we still learn this as adults. Shane, thanks for listening in Melbourne, and thank you for those very thoughtful words.
This is Focus on ABC Radio Perth.
Yes, you are. Great to have your company. We're talking resilience today on Focus. Clark White with me. He's the head of the prep school at Guildford Grammar. Dr. Marnie Leishman is a psychologist and a mother as well. And Clark is a father, I should have pointed out. And Taryn Houghton is an executive of Engagement and Helping Minds, a mum as well. We're talking about experiences of resilience, how you build it, what it means to you, and you can keep your calls and texts coming. I'm getting a lot of texts saying, please remember that no means no. I have literally got about 10 texts saying that. No means no. How does that work with resilience, Clark?
Yeah, you just say it a lot.
Do you say it a lot at school?
You do, and you stick with it. We have a generation of trial lawyers who think they can argue every point, and often because, you know, what's changed with resiliency too is we have parents who are generally older with less kids and less time. And because of it, we're trying to speed parent a little bit. And that ability to slow down and actually be still is crucial to this process. And in a fast world, the no's often get dissolved very quickly, and we give in because of just the speed, and we have to stick to our no's.
Sticking to your no's sounds easier than it is, though, Marnie.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And that's the thing, is that people don't want the pain of the response from the teenager when they actually say no, because they don't have time to do with it, to actually deal with it. But the thing is, you're conditioning your child not to be able to handle the no's that life will give them. And that can be really problematic, because life's going to give you no's. It's not going to give you what you want. You can't always be instantly gratified. And I think a lot of people are going out into adulthood, because we've got to remember, when we're raising children, we're raising future adults. Again, when life gives them a no, they really find it quite difficult, and they just don't know what to do with that.
Taryn Houghton, when should we start teaching resilience in children? What is the work you do in the programs through Helping Minds tell us of how early this should start?
I love that question, and I actually think from birth we teach them resilience. And I think it's really interesting, as they grow, we kind of think they will kind of be okay. You know, could you imagine if they were a baby and they're starting to learn to walk, if they fell over once? We went, actually, it's okay. Don't worry, you've just fallen over. I think you should crawl. You know, we don't. We get them back up and keep going and keep going. But also when they're little, they kind of seem to need more of our time. And then when they grow up, we're like, okay, you can kind of do it a bit more. But they actually still need a lot of our time. But it's more from, I think, the emotional side of things, being there for them. I see resilience as it's problem solving with a healthy mindset.
Oh, I quite like that. I quite like that definition. Whose job is it to teach this? I mean, we talked about in the home, but where else is it coming from? It can't all be on either the parents or the school. Who's involved in building this resilience, Clark White?
I think it's the village. We go back to the whole village, and it's coaches. It's, you know, we talk about driving our kids to sports. Sports is a great way to teach resiliency. But it's in everything they do. So it's activities. It's everyone who's exposed, has exposure to our children. They have an obligation and an opportunity to teach resiliency to our kids, and to stay with a hard no and allow them to fail.
You want to add to that, Marnie?
Yeah. And I think, one of the greatest teachers of resilience is, nature, getting our kids outside. So we need the village, because we're very safe communities now. We've got locked doors and things like that. We need to be, as a village, whenever we have our children, is putting them into spaces where it's going to teach them resilience. And I think one of the best ones is, climbing the trees, getting outside, playing on the skateboard, falling off it, giving them those opportunities to safely stuff up and realise that they're not going to be negatively judged or rejected from the pack.
I've got to say, most of my best memories are from falling out of the tree. Anyway, I mean, exactly. Nature is important. It has such a calming influence on us, and then it also does teach us about failure. Now, do you agree this idea, Taryn, of the village, or is there someone who has the primary role of teaching resilience?
No, I agree completely with the village being involved, but also as parents, we need to let them be involved. I think that parents today, they all actually just have to be kind to themselves, and parents, everybody needs to be kind to parents, because we're all out there going, well, if your child's not resilient, it's because you're, you know, a bad parent. Well, let's actually support one another. Mm. And when coming back to Clark's comment about sport coaches, I actually feel that we need to let kids know what the score is. I have a 10-year-old son who plays Auskick, and nobody knows the score. Well, the kids know the score. The kids know who won the game, but, you know, the coaches aren't allowed to say.
Oh, let's go to Megan. She has three children, and she says she's a firm believer in saying no, but what's the problem, Megan?
The problem are other parents. I think we're all, I 20 years ago, I just don't recall anyone that was sort of in an adult position really wanting to be my best friend. And I feel like today, we've lost a bit of that, you know, we feel the need that, you know, we've got to make our kids happy. We can't say no because we need them to be our friends and to like us. And I think a lot of problems come from that. I am really engaged with my kids. I'm the first one to get on the floor, have a wrestle with them. We have funny jokes. But, you know, there's a no. Like, there's a no at the end of the day. And I think when you are engaged and you can have fun, they're more likely to respect you when you do pull the pin and you do say no to the things, you know, that life isn't always fun. You know, it's not adventure world every day.
it certainly isn't.
you know, and the kids will twist you. You know, they're out to get what they can. but you've got to be on guard. And I think the other thing too is we've lost the confidence in being able to discipline, and I use that in inverted commas because I know there's levels of that, but other children. Yes. And, you know, when children talk inappropriately to adults or to each other, that's that community feel again. And we all have to know what the, you know, where to take it. But I have no problems telling children, you don't talk like that. Yeah, and I don't feel the need to have to consult their parents about that.
Megan, thank you for being blunt. And there's a lot of pretty raw honesty there. I mean, that idea, Clark, that it's other parents that can be the problem. Is it okay to set up? I mean, you talked about family values before. When someone else's children come into your house, is part of resilience not disciplining them is, you know, the broader term, but setting those sort of boundaries, I suppose, really, isn't it?
Such a good point about setting boundaries. And when people come into your home, it's setting them really early. A lot of it's around technology now, but it's also about, you know, the opportunities for them to, you know, the social aspect. When we bring people into our homes, they actually have to get used to a different set of rules. And that in itself teaches resiliency. But I go back to your point Taryn made about we need to be kind to parents, because it's really easy to find fault in other parents when we're all trying to do our best. And in a very – we just – you know, I just think my encouragement for parents is just to slow down and enjoy the moment. And let's get back to words like, my kid's normal. He's average. You know,
I love it.
We've lost those words.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to bring him back to say, yep, he's just normal.
I was one of seven kids, so I was almost always pretty average and pretty normal because, you know, you're always going to have a higher achiever amongst seven. You go into schools through Helping Minds trying to achieve resilience. Give us a bit of an insight into how programs work, Taryn Houghton.
With our students, we actually work with we have a lifelong resilience program, and we talk through things that we would teach adults. So we talk about goal setting. And goal setting is actually something that I do with my kids. So my kids are 10 and 15, and on like the 1st of January, we set our goals for the year.
Give us an example of what that can look like for your children, just by way of example.
So my daughter is a netballer. She loves it, and she wants to step up and make the regional team. So it's about how are you going to get there? And then once they've got their long-term goal, we break it down into their medium and their short-term goal. And I do that with my 10-year-old son as well. So he, again, we're very sport orientated, but it could be, you know, academic. Unfortunately, I said to my kids that they could get $20 for an A. I was very poor by the end of last year.
Oh, that's good news, though, that they're doing well.
But it's just about setting those things that they can actually achieve. So within our things that we do in schools, the lifelong resilience, as I said, is the goal setting. It is about what to do with failure. It's about how to actually look inside yourself and stop looking externally. And I think that that's really important. And going back to the no thing, I think that's about no is setting boundaries. And if we teach our kids young how to accept boundaries, I feel, and Marnie can probably add to this, that as adults, they will be comfortable with their own boundaries.
You're with Jess Strutt on Focus. That was the voice of Taryn Houghton. She's the Executive of Engagement at Helping Minds. Dr. Marnie Leishman, boundaries?
Oh, boundaries. I say that all day long to every client that I work with.
It can cost a lot if your parents don't teach you these things, can't it? All these psychologists' fees.
Oh, my gosh. But if you can't have, boundaries for yourself, like there's going to be a lot of problems later on because, you're just going to be people-pleasing and really having a hard time with what life brings to you. But, I think in my household, no means no, and that's going to be very different to every parent, every household. So I really think parents, have some self-compassion for what you're going through. Have a think of what's best for you as a family unit, and that's, again, very different for everyone. And keep your eyes on your own paper and be confident with that and own it.
A really good question from Adam, and it's relating to this boundary thing, and it seems to me that there's a lot of pressure on families to be like other families and to parent like other families, and I think that's been around forever. But he says, fantastic segment this morning talking about resilience in our kids. One of the challenges I often find with our family and our friends' family is getting both parents aligned and around appropriate boundary settings for our kids. What tips does the panel have for how we can ensure that as parents we are aligned on those issues? That is such a good question and critical. Let's start with you, Clark White, the head of PrEP at Guildford Grammar. What would your advice be on parents, I suppose, being in alignment here on that issue of the boundaries?
Such a good question, and you're right. And it comes down to conversations, and I go back, it comes down to values again too, is what are the values we hold as a family? What do we want to stay true to? And even though we might parent differently, and we do hope we parent differently, I mean, and we have lots of parents who are in single families, so we have all that. But if we actually agree on some core principles that we want to believe in as a family, then we stick to those. And then it allows us the leeway to parent differently within that, but too many families don't have conversations around it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, we're all driven by our values, but we need to actually have a conversation about them because two parents can have quite different ones. So it's raising the consciousness, having the conversation about what are our values around parenting, and then actually getting people to operationalize. What does that mean?
When there's the clash, though, how do you do that? Because if one says no digital devices at the table so we can have this discussion around how many failures we've had today, which I'm sure listeners will definitely be doing tonight, how do you reach that? Is that a case of compromise? And I suppose a lot of this, Adam's question, goes to the issue of consistency in parenting.
Exactly. And I would also add to that and say, have that conversation away from the kids, because if they know that you're on different pages, they're going to use that.
Absolutely. All right. What did you want to add to that, Taryn Houghton?
I think when we're talking a lot of kind of technical speak with values and checking in and all that kind of stuff, and you raised the point before, what does that actually mean? So when we're talking about values, it's about, as a family, what is the most important thing for you? And when we then write that down, and you could like do it just as the parents and then figure out, and your lists may be similar or they may be different, and you could then find that common ground together. Yeah. And then from there, take that out to the kids. And what do we want as a family?
That's a great idea. So, and thank you for breaking that down, because I think you're right. Sometimes we sort of lose that. We move straight to the acronyms or the terms, the popular terms. But effectively, if you clarify those values, even just somewhere, sticking them somewhere public, you know, I don't know, Clark, like on the chalkboard, or you don't have those anymore, on the whiteboard, in a school, or even on a fridge at home. How important is it to publicly display that, do you think, that so to keep on that same page as a family unit, Clark?
Massively important, because words have power, and when the more often you see the words, the more they resonate with you. And I've seen some great households that on the steps going upstairs, if they had a two-story, on each step was a different family value. I've seen it with framed posters in their house and stuff like that. And you truly know that your kids have buy-in when they put sticky notes next to it disagreeing with you.
Yeah.
Toilet.
Oh, yeah.
So,
In the toilet?
Yeah.
I was thinking you've just been the first advocate for double story McMansions, so just so that you can have the values up there. Marnie, you wanted to add something to that?
Oh, yeah. Just adding to
the public display.
Yeah. But, yeah, like Taryn said, like actually, yeah, having that conversation about it, what's important to all of us as a family. But you'll find that, yeah, when the kids are actually involved, because kids thrive with boundaries, they thrive with, being involved in some of these decisions. Because if you've got some sort of ownership over it, you're more likely to actually go along with it. So, start with the parents, but then involve the children.
You were Jess Strutt on the Focus program, ABC Radio Perth. You're listening to Clark White, the head of prep school at Guildford Grammar, Dr. Marnie Leishman, psychologist, and Taryn Houghton, who is the executive of engagement at Helping Minds. I've been asking you for your experiences today, 1300 222 720, and Stephen has worked with refugee children and has some insights on resilience. Hello, Stephen.
Yeah, good morning. I used to work, I don't work there now, but I used to work with refugee children coming to West Australia. And part of that process was that they used to have health assessments. So I'd take them from the school and take them to a health assessment centre, which is based in a school. And, one day I took about three or four nice, awesome young people for their health assessment. And in the front of the schoolyard was this beautiful gum tree, huge thing. And these guys, they go, wow, let's climb that tree. And I thought, yeah, go on, go for it, have fun. So they're jumping up and down, climbing the branches. And then someone came out from the school, and this is what's changed so much in our society, and they stood there with their hands on their hips and they said, do not climb trees. We have a duty of care and you will hurt yourself, so stop climbing the trees. I thought it was rather amusing.
It's a great story to share. The three guests today all shaking their heads a lot there. And Stephen, I mean, it's just one of the things I hate. It's like when you see councils come up and tell off people because they put a, you know, a slippery slide or a trampoline or a swing in the tree, and you're thinking, for goodness sakes, I understand there's, you know, negligent issues around it, but I mean, you've got to have fun. How important is it to, you know, I suppose we talked about risks at the start, Clark, but do you see that kind of stuff happening quite a bit in the schoolyard these days where people, the administration, want to step in and stop things from being, well, I suppose they're risk adverse.
Yeah, no, and we actually need to rephrase that and look at risk benefits. And what are the risk benefits from climbing trees? What are the risk benefits from being in school with your shoes off? What are the risk benefits of having a slippery slide that you just made that morning? We need to do all those things. And I see schools slightly moving back in that direction because we got too overprotective. There was softball everywhere. And now I see things starting to change, but we just actually need to embrace risk benefits as a whole culture again.
We haven't got much time left, but I want to touch on what happens if we don't build resilience in children. At its worst, what can it mean for the long term of that child, I suppose, Taryn?
I think from my perspective, it's about, well, actually, I'll give a life story. My mum is a teacher. She's been a teacher for 45 years, she's just retired.
Well, that's an effort.
Yes, she's an amazing woman and teacher. And what she found throughout the years was how kids have changed. And we want to teach our kids resilience and failure when they're young so that when they get to their big stuff in life, so say if they're sitting their exams or they're, you know, learning to drive a car or anything that could kind of be really big in their life, they've already got those skills of how to problem solve.
Yeah, the losing the jobs and the break relationship breakdowns and all those other big things, if you can't handle those small things, what do you think we're looking at if we don't build this in children? What, at its worst, what long-term impacts can it, I mean, you see these, this firsthand.
Exactly. Arnie. We need that adaptable mindset going forward in life. I think we've really seen what the effect of a pandemic's had on people. People can't cope with change, and we're moving into a rapidly changing world where imposed change can happen at any moment. And I think if we don't, build that resilience in our children now, what we're going to find is, increase in mental health problems later on in life, and that's increases in stresses, anxiety and depression.
Clark, do you agree? Is it basically going to show itself as an increase in mental health conditions if we don't? I mean, it's very hard to get onto when you've reached adulthood and you're completely not able to cope with the small stuff, and then the big stuff comes along.
I think that's why the importance of this conversation today, because if we get onto it early and be okay to fail and get it wrong and not be perfect parents and just try and get into the messiness of life, it's going to be okay, because what we have is a generation of kids that we call them teacups or crispies, is they've never had adversity, they've never had failure. And when the first time they have it, the first breakup they have, or the first time they get fired from a job or don't get the job, they fall apart completely. And so we haven't given them that base. So it's hugely important, but the importance of this conversation today.
One of the things that I want all parents to kind of think about is their own mental health and well-being. I spoke at the beginning about, you know, if parents have anxiety, that may then transpire into them not wanting their kids to take risk. And when you were talking about risk before, looking at risk benefit, an example would be, you know, letting your kid ride to school. You know, many parents don't let that happen because they could fall, they could hurt themselves, they could be abducted. Let's look at this. Are those risks, you know, are they real? Are they really going to happen? How many times, you know, will they actually hurt themselves? And if as a parent you feel that your anxiety is really high, I really encourage people to go and seek support for themselves.
I think I'll just go to a couple of texts here. So many, I'm sorry, I won't get to all of them, but thank you so much for sending them in today. It's been a fascinating discussion. And of course, if you want to go back and have a listen or share this with someone in your life, perhaps, who might need a reminder, say the person who co-parents with you or, I don't know, your mum, you can do that at the ABC Radio Perth website. This text says, we're a nuclear family world now, not as many grandparents around for support and someone to ask for help. Family values are most important. Thank you, correspondent. Hearing a lot of that during the course of the last hour. Sebastian says, Jess, I spent the weekend with my cousin and her four-year-old. The kids spent all weekend telling her parents where she was going, what she was going to do, what she was going to eat. I think I would have spent the whole weekend in my room. Yes, we've all had those experiences, correspondent. Just remember, no means no. But my big thanks to Clark Wyatt, the head of prep school at Guildford Grammar, Dr. Marnie Leishman, psychologist, and also to Taryn Houghton, the executive of engagement at Helping Minds. A fascinating discussion, and I'm sure you all got something out of that.
This is Focus on ABC Radio Perth.